rate reduction for all those providers and families effective 11/1, November 1st, based on the amount of money available. That's when this restoration would take effect. And that affects all the families that are providing foster care, special rates foster care, and that have negotiated adoption assistance agreements. This does not fully restore. There was an additional 2.5% reduction in the special rates foster care payments. This doesn't fully restore that. The agency felt that there was some room to take a look at those rates and how they were being applied statewide and perhaps get some more consistency and a little bit of savings from looking at that. So this allows them to continue to do that. And then item number 9 addresses the funding under the system of care, which is the negotiated settlement with the Juvenile Rights Project in terms of how child welfare services are delivered and the resources that are available for foster children. At the start of the 0103 biennium, there was $12.4 million available in flexible funding, basically funding that can be used for services that other pots of money aren't available for. That would be available for individualized services for these children. The governor's budget initially was identified as having $3 million of flexible funding plus $2 million for staffing related to system of care. In the reshoot, the departmental's rebalance, if you will, of their 0305 governor's budget, there was a correction so that the total funding for flexible funding at that point was $5 million plus the $2 million staffing. This brings to $8 million the total general fund for system of care flexible funding. And then you can see there are some matching funds associated with that. So in the budget with this adjustment, there's $8 million general fund for the flexible funding system of care, and there's $2 million of staffing in the community human services budget.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Obviously, this is, for somebody just becoming familiar with this budget, I may have a couple questions. I'm not sure exactly if this is the right place to ask them or not. But on some of the things that are omissions, student daycare, would that be in this department?
Student daycare would be in this budget. It was about a $2 million budget item during 0103, but was eliminated with the budget adjustments during the interim. I know there is some interest in restoring at least $1 million of that, but it's not included in this budget at this time.
And follow up on that question. And how much federal match we'd be losing on the federal daycare?
I believe in the student daycare, there's not federal match associated with that. I can go back and check, but I've just seen the general fund numbers. Okay, the next page is community human services. This is the field staffing piece, if you will, for the Department of Human Services. It includes self-sufficiency staff, child welfare staff, vocational rehabilitation staff that are out in the field, and some of the senior and disabled services staff. The adjustments to this budget, the first four are technical, if you will, relate similar to what we saw in the Children, Adults, and Families budget. There's additional federal money that can be used to offset general fund based on the merit freeze adjustments and the vacancy savings that were already identified for this budget. The federal match rate change impact is noted there, and then the impact of the enhanced Medicaid match rate under federal fiscal relief is noted there. The add back on line 5 relates to the independent living centers. This was, again, new funding in terms of general fund support for 2001-2003. It was eliminated early on in the biennium, and then the emergency board provided enough funding to continue it through June 30th. Because of the timing of that restoration, it was shown in the governor's budget as a reduction that continued into 0305. And so this continues funding, general fund support for it for 0305. At the same level as it was initially approved in 0103.
Representative Hanson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Couple questions on some omissions. Juvenile diabetes, children's emergency services, and school-based health clinics. Would they have been...
All of those will be in the health services budget area, and I'll let John address those. And if there's no questions on those budget pieces, then I'll turn it back over to John to go through to do the heavy lifting, if you will.
Thank you, Sheila. John?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Moving on through the health services budget, you'll notice that the governor's printed budget is at the top. Again, the preliminary subcommittee budget is the next line down. Other recommended adjustments, we had double counted in our preliminary subcommittee budget about three positions, $260,000 of general fund for vacancy savings. They'd already been taken in the co-chair's budget, so we are adding a little bit back here to correct that double count. The second line is along the lines of what Sheila has been talking about. This is additional merit freeze adjustment, fund shifting, using some federal funds that were freed up through vacancy positions to backfill further general fund. Likewise, this is the same kind of adjustment on line three, with vacancy savings, fund shift using available grant funds, federal grant funds. The adjustment for the federal Medicaid match rate change that Sheila has mentioned is $2.1 million for this particular cluster. Line 5 shows you the adjustment for the enhanced Medicaid match rate, the federal fiscal relief bill that was passed, almost $52 million of general fund backed out here. Line 6 shows the first restoration, which is about $5.6 million of lottery funds that have been dedicated for the treatment of gambling addiction. You'll notice back up the difference in the lottery funds column between the governor's printed budget and the preliminary subcommittee budget shows a reduction of all of the lottery funds that had been in here from the within the governor's printed budget of almost $6.9 million. Line 6 restores $5.6 million of that amount. Line 7 is the addition of $5 million of general fund to restore a co-chair's reduction of $5 million to alcohol and drug treatment services. Line 8 restores a reduction that was carried over from the 2001-03 session related to 24-hour, 7-day-a-week mental health crisis services, about $3.9 million of general fund. Line 9 is the restoration of mental health community services for non-Medicaid adults and children, $11.8 million of general fund. Line 10 is the partial restoration of children's psychiatric day treatment program, $4.9 million. There is a small amount of federal match. Most of these, the children in this cut were non-Medicaid eligible. Line 11 eliminates the balance of the tobacco use reduction account funding for tobacco prevention. It takes, in essence, $7.9 million out of this account, the tobacco use reduction account, and uses it to backfill general fund within the health plan. Line 12, transfer the available tobacco settlement funds to the Oregon Health Plan. There are about $42.2 million of tobacco settlement funds that are available over and above what is anticipated to be used for debt service on some bonds. This would apply those dollars in and free up $42.2 million of general fund. Line 13 is the Oregon Health Plan addition. Some of you, I know, have seen the matrix pricing that has been in play as far as what the department produced in the way of adding back for the Oregon Health Plan. This is $165 million of general fund, $11.6 million of other funds, $274.1 million of federal match. This, at this level of the Oregon Health Plan, the fully capitated health plan rates would be at about 9.2% increase per year. The standard, OHP standard caseload would be capped at an average caseload of around 71,000 persons. This add back does not include a hospital benefit for the standard population. It only includes primary care, that is physician, alcohol and drug treatment, and mental health treatment. It also includes some limited durable medical equipment, as well as an emergency dental benefit.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Patrick.
Just for the record, as people know in the building, we are attempting to work on the hospital benefit. We're working with consultants and lawyers and other people to try and make sure that we can work that out, but that was anticipated that it would come as a supplemental bill in when we can get the final details worked out on that. But it is a very complex matter, and we decided to move this ahead and are still pursuing that. But there should not be any indication that we are not pursuing that.
And I might add, Mr. Chair and members, that adding other funds and federal funds limitation is a relatively simple matter to this budget during an emergency board if necessary, or sooner if we can. Line 14 is the elimination of the practice of OHP prior authorization that had been assumed in the governor's budget. That was assumed as a savings of $12 million. Since we're eliminating that, we need to add $12 million back to the budget. We have estimated pharmaceutical savings of about $8 million general fund. We have further pharmaceutical savings as we're increasing mail order pharmacy use. And the 30%, as you'll see in a budget note, has been changed to about 15 to 18%. It's about $600,000 of general fund savings. Finally, managed mental health drug savings is estimated at about $3.3 million of general fund, and you see the related federal match. This is not adopting a prior authorization practice, but it is adopting some voluntary generic drugs where they can be effectively used for the treatment of psychiatric ailments. If I may, Mr. Chair, I'd like to address the questions, and I'll try and remember them. I think Representative Hansen asked about safety, school-based health clinics.
School-based health clinics, juvenile diabetes, and children's emergency services.
The school-based health clinics would be an add-back within this cluster. Its add-back would be about $2.7 million. It's not on here. The juvenile diabetes and children's emergency services, likewise, are not on the add-back list for this particular bill, but they are worth about $300,000 total together. I think about $100,000 for the juvenile diabetes and $200,000 for the EMS for children.
Representative Hansen.
Okay, a couple more questions. How does this address the medically needy program?
Mr. Chair and Representative Hansen, it includes about $21 million for some kind of medically needy program and or a senior prescription drug benefit. The details of that program have not been finalized, but there has been extensive work throughout the session on that particular program.
Additional question. Relating to the cap, you estimated at 71,000. I guess my numbers are there's about 65,000 on the Oregon Health Care at this point. Has there been discussions in terms of what the anticipated growth is? Where, I guess I want to get a feeling for how likely is it that people are not going to be able to get on the Oregon Health Plan in a systematic way when they become eligible for it?
Mr. Chair and Representative Hansen, there's been extensive talk about that particular issue. You are correct in your understanding that the caseload for the OHP standard population is about at 65,000 today. We saw a fairly significant drop in the standard caseload this spring. We believe that it is primarily due to the fact that the OHP2 waiver allowed us to impose premiums payment on that population. A number of people did not pay their premiums and subsequently lost coverage. So as a result, we saw a significant drop in that caseload. The real question that we are uncertain about is what will happen in the future. If we are adding back an alcohol and drug benefit, mental health services, will that make it more of a package that people want to buy into? And if so, will that drive the caseload above that cap? And that's, I can't answer that with a great deal of certainty. We simply don't know the answer to that.
Representative Patrick?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We have looked at this very, very extensively in terms of the number of people on the Oregon Health Plan. I think even the department's estimates were about 94,000 for the scope of the biennium, but those were based upon the fact that almost 20,000 people more would be enrolled at the current, about 20,000 more would be enrolled currently. So I think, as I would agree with John, that it's very, very difficult to determine based upon the volatility of the plan right now. We have left some space on the top of the plan to see what happens. There's nothing preventing anyone from coming back should funds be available to raise that cap at any point in time into the future, or the emergency board or other people should that be there. But we have some room under the cap currently, and it is a prudent public policy, I think, at this point in time to freeze this.
Representative Hansen?
Yeah, if I could pass to the other members. This is, I'm passing out the letter that was signed by the governor, the speaker, and president of the Senate. To the Honorable Tommy Thompson, Secretary of Health and Human Services, requesting expeditious request for a waiver. How does this funding package, how will it impact changes from the waiver that we've already requested, and is there a potential that could delay the implementation of the waiver?
Mr. Chair and Representative Hansen, a new waiver, at least as I understand it, would change the way things are currently done, particularly for the OHP standard population. That's where much of the change would occur. The waiver that we are under today has a core group of benefits for the OHP standard population. That is hospital, physician services, laboratory services, and x-ray services. On top of that, there are a list of optional services that we can choose to provide or not to provide. Those would be pharmaceuticals, treatment for alcohol and drug addiction, mental health services, durable medical equipment services, and dental. Now, a number of those optional services were, over the course of the 2001-03 biennium, removed. In fact, all of those optional services, with the exception of pharmaceutical services, are now gone. So to move to a waiver that would, instead of having hospital within the core group, would instead have would have mental health, addiction services, primary care, and so on, it is a major shift in policy. The pricing package here, the $165 million, does cover this and is consistent with this letter. However, it does impose a cap on the standard population, and I don't believe that that's mentioned in this letter.
Representative Hanson.
Are the premises that this budget is based on, is that based on a time certain to be receiving the waiver? I guess my concern is that if we have to make changes in that letter, include a cap, start the process over again, are we going to be able to get a waiver in time to meet the projections in this budget?
Mr. Chair and Representative Hanson, that remains to be seen. I would point out, though, that with respect to a cap on the standard population, our current waiver would technically allow that. There is some disagreement about whether state law allows it. We have various opinions on that. Whether that would slow down the process, I can't say with any certainty. This budget, however, assumes that whatever new waiver is implemented would happen by January 1st of 2004.
Representative Patridge.
Hey, Mr. Chair. I'd also like to provide a little context maybe for the $165 million that was put up for the Oregon Health Plan, and especially in relation to the June 6th, 2003 letter that was signed by the governor and leadership. At the point in time when this letter was signed, the department's and today, the department's numbers have changed radically in terms of how much it would cost to do the Oregon Health Plan. The leadership assumption that was made at the point in time that this letter was signed was that there would be $163 million for the Oregon Health Plan, that by implementing sooner this new Oregon Health Plan and managed care, that we would be able to achieve some savings, and in addition, would be able to do it without the caps at $163 million. Since that point in time, not only has the population that they anticipate would be on the Oregon Health Plan declined, but the cost of the services have gone up, and the department has given us numbers that indicate that there would be no savings if we were to implement the plan sooner rather than later. So those are some of the things that have played into resolving the budget at this particular budget level and providing the caps. Realizing that fact and realizing the fiscal crisis the state is in, we thought it prudent to, while keeping the commitment to keep the same amount of money in there and also keeping our commitment to Oregonians who are currently on the Oregon Health Plan at about 65,000 people for the standard, to keep our commitment to them, but at the same time be fiscally prudent because the numbers have taken such wild swings despite the fact that the overall population that would be covered has gone down.
Thank you, Representative.
One last question. The difference between the $165 million and the $200 million additional that some of us have been advocating. John, could you tell me what the difference on the amount of missed opportunity for federal match would be if we added $35 million more to the health plan?
Mr. Chair and Representative Hanson, the match on $35 million of general fund, that would be about 40%, so divide by 2 and multiply times 3. So 17 times 3 is about $55 million, somewhere in there.
Close enough.
Mr. Chair, I just wanted to say we agreed to the 163 level. The leadership group agreed to the 163 level. To buy what the 163 was agreed to today, even though the population has gone down, would cost us $281 million, a difference basically of $120 million. To put that in context of the revenue discussion that is going on in the building, that would be a 10% across-the-board reduction in things like your home mortgage interest and things like that in order to fill that particular hole. So that is the gravity that we face in making some of these significant budget decisions that are faced with today. We have made a commitment to Oregonians, I believe, and are trying to keep as much of that commitment as we can by crafting this budget on good public policy. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, I will continue with the next and the last budget cluster, the seniors and people with disabilities cluster. Again, at the top of the page is the governor's printed budget, the preliminary subcommittee budget, and then other recommended adjustments. The first three adjustments are similar to what you've seen already: the additional merit freeze adjustment, fund shift, additional vacancy savings adjustment, the fund shift, and the adjustment for the federal Medicaid match rate change from 60.81 to 60.88 weighted average, those first three lines. Line four is a correction of the preliminary work session adjustment for the enhanced Medicaid match rate, the Federal Fiscal Relief Act, and you'll see that it is an addition of 11.4. We had already taken out, unlike the other clusters, about $32 million of general fund associated with that enhanced federal Medicaid match rate change. The correct number is more like $21 million, so we are adding back. I would note that on the second page, the first page shows you that the enhanced Medicaid match rate adjustment overall is about 46.2, but the four quarters of federal fiscal relief is worth about $78.3 million. The remaining quarter of federal fiscal relief, the fifth quarter, or really the first quarter, took place in the 2001-03 biennium. The department has already claimed that federal match and will use it to backfill general fund and revert the general fund to the overall general fund ending balance for the 2001-03 biennium. You'll see the number, if you haven't already, $216 million associated with the Federal Fiscal Relief Act. $100 million of that was the estimate of this enhanced federal match rate. So four quarters, almost $80 million. A fifth quarter would be almost $100 million. Back on page 7, you'll see on line 5, the removal of other funds and federal funds limitation associated with the Medicaid upper payment limit. This adjustment is consistent with removing all MUPL revenue from the budget for the 03-05 biennium, and this is how we did it in terms of expenditure limitation. Line 6 is additional funding for the negotiated home care workers agreement, $25 million of general fund and associated federal match. Line 7 is restoring Oregon Project Independence, an additional $8.4 million of general fund. This brings the total amount for OPI up to $11.7 million of general fund. We had included $3.3 in an earlier work session. 11.7 is the legislatively approved budget level for 2001-03, the final budget level for OPI during the last biennium. Line 8 is a cost of living adjustment for assisted living facilities of $2.2 million general fund and associated federal match. Line 9 is a restoration of the Retired Senior Volunteer Program of $275,000. Line 10 is the Nursing Facility Provider Tax. This will take care of rebasing as well as a rate increase effective July 1st, 2003. Now, this requires other legislation. My understanding is that is in the overall revenue package. It adds about $43.6 million other funds and associated federal match of $67.9 million. You'll notice at the very bottom of the page, there is, in addition to the general fund here of $774.4, the recommendation of an appropriation to the emergency board for Staley agreement costs. The co-chairs added a significant amount back for the Staley agreement, and that is reflected in the preliminary subcommittee budget. However, our recommendation was to create a special purpose appropriation that is the difference between the budgeted cost of about $800 a month for adult support services under Staley to what the department actually spent during the 01-03 biennium of $550. We expect those costs to go up, and in fact, in the Staley settlement, there is a listing of the $800 a month. But we are setting it aside as a special purpose appropriation, and if those costs do come up, the department can come in and request these funds from the emergency board. The last page, again, we haven't spent much time talking about this, but this is a capital improvement fund for the Oregon State Hospital of about $1.2 million of general fund. You can see that we have not made any previous adjustment to this in the preliminary subcommittee budget, nor are we suggesting you make any change to this during this final work session.
Thank you. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One of the areas that we've had a lot of discussion through this session and through the special sessions are how do we serve the various priority level senior citizens. How does the funding in, and I'm assuming it's through the OPI add backs or is it through the health plan, what levels of service are we going to be able to support with this budget?
Mr. Chair and Representative Hansen, this budget, it is not, first of all, added back through the OPI budget addition. The co-chair's budget provided enough funding, and this funding was included in the preliminary work session for up through level 11, so 1 through 11. This does not contain an add back beyond level 11.
Okay. Thank you.
Further questions? Representative Patridge.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We, in regard to the seniors' budgets, we were able to add back many important programs, however, like Oregon Project Independence, due to the fact that we were able to work with the industry in regard to the nursing homes and in order to provide adequate rates for them. This biennium, they've been able to step up so that we could work hand in hand to provide adequate rates, and so we don't have nursing homes shutting down across the state of Oregon. So I just wanted to acknowledge that particular fact, and we have built some of those factors into our budget for that.
Further discussion? You want to cover the budget notes?
Sure,
we'd
be happy to.
All right.
As I mentioned when I introduced our work session, there are a fair number of budget notes, several of which have been already approved through the Joint Ways and Means Subcommittee, but not very many of them. So I think we should review briefly all of them if we can for you. And I would turn it over to Sheila to cover the first several here.
On the first page of this handout, the department-wide support services has three budget notes proposed. The first two, the Human Services Subcommittee reviewed and approved. The first one relates to a staffing study. There's interest in trying to identify what an appropriate level of staffing is in both in programs and administrative support in the agency. And so this uses some existing funding related to the reorganization and reinvestment funds. It relates to using some of that funding to do such a staffing study and bring the results back to the next legislature. The second budget note is part of a Department of Administrative Services efforts to better match up agency accounting and budget structures And the department has done some significant work on this as part of their reorganization. But the recommendation was to include this budget note and then have a report come back to the next session on a continued progress in making those linkages. The third budget note, the subcommittee did not see. This relates to some work that was suggested to help the department review how its financial information is collected, analyzed, and presented to the legislature. This issue came up particularly with regards to the health plan, but is broader than that, and so this budget note is recommended to have such a effort made. The next budget note relates to children, adults, and families. Separate funding for the Jobs Plus program was eliminated this interim as part of the budget reductions. This budget note signals that it's not an intention not to use Jobs Plus as a mechanism where it's appropriate that the agency should do that as part of their overall jobs program funding.
Continuing with the health services budget note, the first one is related to the administration of combination vaccines. This, in some instances, is cheaper than applying those vaccines individually, and this encourages the department, through education of providers, to administer combination vaccines when medically appropriate and cost-effective. The second budget note relates to psychiatric day treatment providers in a new payment and billing system. It requires the department to report this methodology, I believe, to the emergency board before the January 2004 and July 2004. The third budget note is related to mental health for children and adolescents with severe emotional disorders and is fairly extensive. It directs the department to take actions by June 30th, 2005. Essentially, those are to integrate inpatient hospital, psychiatric residential, psychiatric day treatment, and community care. In other words, to provide a continuum of care for children and adolescents with mental illness. The fourth budget note for health services directs the department to initiate efforts to increase the use of mail order pharmacy. We mentioned a moment ago that there was a relatively small cost reduction related to this. The department is encouraged to attempt to attain a level of mail order delivery of about 15% to 18%. And the department is directed to report back on those efforts before February 1st, 2005. For seniors and people with disabilities, the first two budget notes relate to the Oregon Project Independence. The first is more rigorous documentation relative to the fees that the department collects, or actually the department doesn't collect the fees, but the area agencies on aging collect fees associated with the Oregon Project Independence. The department is directed to obtain complete documentation from the AAAs on these fees, and the department is to compile the data and report to the emergency board by October 2004. The second one, the department is directed to work with the AAAs to determine whether certain uses of the Oregon Project Independence administrative funds, such as informing persons about the Medicaid long-term care program, are eligible to be matched. And if, in the opinion of the department, they are eligible, certain activities under OPI are eligible to be matched, the department is to work with the AAAs on getting that match. Finally, the department is directed in budget note 3 for seniors to examine its client assessment process and service level priority regulations. These relate to the questions that you asked about levels, the survival priority levels. And the agency is directed to report back to the emergency board and directed not to make further service level eligibility reductions without emergency board or legislative authorization.
Mr. Chair.
For Representative Morgan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. With relation to the health services section, budget note number 3, was there discussion about in the process around this and the cost that it would add? Were there any fiscal discussions around this budget note at all?
Mr. Chair and Representative Morgan, there were not discussions about the fiscal cost of this. This was not presented to the subcommittee in Ways and Means. This is the first time that a legislative body has seen it. I will tell you that a number of advocates have agreed to this particular budget note, and this does not necessarily drive up the budget at all. We're not adding money to accommodate the practices that are advocated in this particular budget note.
May I have a follow-up, Mr. Chair?
Absolutely. Representative Morgan.
In terms of policy changes, could you talk to us a little bit about what this does to change the policy that was previously driving these programs?
Mr. Chair and Representative Morgan, I wish I could, but I'm out of my league on that particular question. I don't know.
John, item number 3 was a negotiated budget note on the budget committee, which they adopted. Is that correct, the subcommittee?
Mr. Chair and Representative Patridge, the subcommittee hasn't seen this budget note.
Item number 3?
That's right. They haven't seen it. They didn't adopt this particular budget note. They have. It's not to say they wouldn't. It's just to say they haven't seen it.
They'd seen 1 and 2?
They had the budget notes that had actually gone through the Joint Ways and Means Subcommittee on this were 1 and 2 under department-wide support services and the 1 under children, adults, and families.
And that's it?
That's it.
So none of the other budget notes had been discussed?
Not before Joint Ways and Means Subcommittee.
I have a question with respect to the department-wide services or support services. On the current ratio is 1 to 8.
Mr. Chair, it depends. It varies from program area. It ranges from about 1 to 7 to 1 to 10, depending on how you're counting it and where you're counting.
All right. Well, okay, thank you for that description of the budget notes. We have before us the dash twos, or performance measures. Let's have
them. Mr. Chair and members, the performance measurements for 3 of the clusters were approved by the subcommittee. Those were the children, adults, and families, the department-wide support services, and the community human services.
Yes.
And the subcommittee deferred action simply because they ran out of time on the seniors and people with disability budget performance measurements, as well as the health services performance measurements. But they are all listed here. The subcommittee did hear testimony and got descriptions of these performance measurements from the department during the public hearings process. And we recommend that you adopt them.
All right. Now, you had also indicated, was there some testimony you wanted to reference?
Mr. Chair, there was written testimony that was submitted. With your permission, we can make that a part of the record.
I'd like to do that.
Okay.
Thank you. We have before us the dash 2 amendments to House Bill 5030, and we are in a work session. Representative Patridge.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move the dash 2 amendments to House Bill 5030.
Representative Patridge moves the dash 2 amendments to House Bill 5030. Is there discussion of the motion? Is there objection?
There's objection. You got one?
Representative Hansen agrees to the adoption of the amendments to the dash 2. or the dash two to 5030, but they are agreed to. The bill as amended is before us. Representative Patridge.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move House Bill 5030 as amended with the LFO recommendations to the full House with a due pass recommendation.
Well, let me clarify the LFO recommendations.
Okay.
I would be prepared to accept the performance measures as outlined, and I would be prepared to accept the subcommittee, previous subcommittee, agreed to budget notes, which would be number one and number two under department-wide support services, and budget note number one under children, adult, and families. My belief that the Senate Budget Committee will have a full and complete understanding of these additional budget note requests, and we may get the opportunity to revisit those.
Mr. Chair, if I might comment.
Representative Morgan.
I would ask you to take a look at the budget notes in the section on seniors and people with disabilities, which appear to relate to information gathering with the AAAs regarding the services and the funding issues in those areas. And my recollections from discussions that I've been involved in, I do think that the process would benefit from having these areas looked at also.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that. I'm just a little hesitant if the subcommittee had not had prior understanding of this particular note, but I'll accept that as an amendment to my suggestion. Representative Patrick?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, just for the record, these notes have been fully vetted with the chair of the subcommittee, the Joint Ways and Means Subcommittee on Human Services. We've gone through all these budget notes with her. She does sit on that Senate committee, and should these additional budget notes need to be added in the Senate, I think that that's appropriate.
I'm confident she will speak up.
Thank you.
Is there any other comment with respect to the budget notes, or we understand we're going to add 1, 2, and 3, seniors and people with disabilities, as well as the three budget notes I had mentioned? With that understanding and the performance measures included in the dash 2s, Representative Patridge has moved House Bill 5030 as amended to the House floor with a due pass recommendation. Do you want to speak, Representative Hanson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To make my final comments on this, I'd like to thank everybody that's worked with me over the last few days trying to bring me up to speed on an incredibly complicated budget. Human services budget includes a lot of small programs, dedicated funds, federal matching funds, legal issues, and numerous other concerns. The total knowledge of this committee combining this all into one work session with no public testimony on the second largest budget in the general fund, I think is an irresponsible process. Two lawyers, a marketing person, and a plumber are about to decide the future human services, the future for human services in Oregon, after one meeting with no expert testimony, no public hearing, and I think that clearly is irresponsible. Right now, we have to have a vote that could determine Oregon's total social safety net. I'll be obviously voting no on this, and I'd like to explain this. I think this budget abandons our children, our seniors. There are numerous examples of underfunding of issues like the school health clinics, programs throughout this that are getting hurt kids in Oregon and not enable them to reach their full potential. Cuts to the prenatal. I mean, we can go on and on. The cuts that are particularly painful to me are with the service levels to the seniors with disabilities. I think we probably all had an opportunity to see a handout from, I think it's the Marion Polk and Yamhill County clients that were presented to us by the Mid-Willamette Valley Senior and Social Service Centers. The example of Leona that was in there, a woman that received previously 10 hours of home assistance at a cost of $83 a month. When those services were cut from her program in February, she slipped carrying her groceries home. She required hospitalization. I think it was cost of at many thousands of dollars. Her service level, her need level, accelerated from being like a level 15 to a level 7. Each one of these cuts, not only do they, you know, seriously impact human beings that aren't going to receive the services that enable them to live well in the twilight of their years, but these cuts are also going to cost us more money in the long run. And I think that's irresponsible, both from a financial sense as well as a human services sense. Just as this budget forsakes our responsibilities to counties by eliminating funds for prenatal, now we break promises that I think the leadership have already made on the Oregon Healthcare Plan. I was appreciating Representative Patridge's explanation of how he's the rationale behind this, but the fact remains that no matter how high our unemployment rate goes, no matter what the station of our economy is, we're going to be capping the Oregon Health Plan so that citizens who need the program the most, there's a very high potential that they're going to not be able to be served. And I don't think that's the direction that the state of Oregon needs to take. I'll be voting no because this is an irresponsible process. And I think this budget is incredibly inadequate to meet the needs of our most needy Oregonians.
Representative Patridge.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In regard to this, the DHS budget in total, much work had been done by the Joint Ways and Means Subcommittee. The only reason we're here today dealing with this budget in this committee is because we appear to be at a deadlock in terms of trying to reach agreement on how many resources really are available. This has been vetted very thoroughly with not only the members of the Ways and Means Subcommittee that work these particular budgets, but caucus members from all sides in total. We have spreadsheets, which I know are out there running around in the media, and probably everyone in this room has one stuffed somewhere in a folder or is looking at one or whatever now. It's a matter of what the priorities are for add-backs and how much we can afford to add back as Oregonians. I think that the public testimony has been extensive and exhaustive in regard to these. Now we're down to a matter of about a difference of about $41 million, $42 million between where Democrats and Republicans sit in this particular budget. Maybe a little bit more or less, depending on which individual members you talk to. We have tried to make a priority of add-backs in this budget at the $250 million level that we hope provides the largest extent of services to Oregonians. I served on the Human Services Budget Committee last time, and I'm a healthcare lawyer. I work for a company and then the general counsel for a company that does senior services. That's what my company does. I'm keenly aware of these particular situations and the choices that we have to make in terms of deciding whether we are going to fund or not fund some of these services. But I will also say in terms of human services that there's lots of things that I would like to fund that are probably not even on this list, but it's a matter of what we can afford right now
We've tried to put together the best kind of budget we can, balancing DHS with education, with public safety, and all the other items. So that's what went into this particular budget. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative. Further discussion? If not, the clerk will call a roll on House Bill 5030 as amended to the floor. Do pass recommendation.
Representative Patrick.
Aye.
Representative Hanson.
No.
Representative Morgan.
Aye.
Chair Miller.
Votes aye. House Bill 5030 as amended is passed to the floor. Do pass recommendation. Work session on House Bill 5030 is closed. Representative Patrick, thank you very much. Anything further to come before the special committee? If not, thank you for your attendance. Please go directly next door. We'll see you there, and we are adjourned.